the Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talman, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the leader.
This is the Sunday Morning Linux Review with
Matt Anders
and Mary Tomich.
What episode is it?
This is episode 77.
Yes.
And we're not going to say Sunset Strip because some people would know that. But it is the M&M Show.
Yes, the M&M Show.
Not to be confused with M&M.
Not to be confused with Marshall Mathers.
That's right. But it's Matt and Mary.
Yes.
Easter. Tony's not here because he found out during the week that his family had plans. So we're going to just carry on without him and just carry on. And we'll do a fine job of
there
it, I think.
Go.
What do you think, Matt?
I think so.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and kind of catch up on
what we did this week.
Yeah. So got any good stories?
What did I do this week? Let's see.
I don't know. You tell
me. What one can I tell?
Are there a lot? No,
there's a few.
Okay, do you need more coffee?
No.
What do you think about it? Maybe I should get your coffee.
No, we had this one instance where we had to, this customer is got a big cluster from us, and they're using Windows databases, but the rest of the cluster is all running Linux.
Like Windows Server?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know why they do that. There are Windows databases, and then the rest of it's all Linux. But we couldn't get backups set up on their databases.
Kind of like KDE. We'll talk about that
later. Yeah, we will. I just couldn't get them to work. I couldn't communicate with the... So I spent a whole day banging on this, trying to figure out what the communication problem was. Why it couldn't... Why the backup server would reach out to the Windows servers and initiate a connection, but then when it verified the client, it couldn't do that because I have to get the key for the server from the server. And the Windows computer could not connect to the backup server at all. Well, it's because Windows chooses the best route to the Internet.
Oh,
that was air quotes for those of you who are not watching. And its best route to the Internet was through the VPN connection to the client and then out to the Internet through their face to the Internet.
Oh, okay.
So our backup server is going, I don't recognize this IP address. I'm not allowing you to connect.
Okay.
And so it was causing huge problems. So I got with one of our lead guys, like my boss's boss, and he said, we have to set a static route. And I went, I don't know how to set a static route in Windows.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, I'll have Nick do it.
Okay.
So
did you learn, though?
No, I did not, because they did it at night. And so Nick came in, and Nick couldn't figure out how to get the static route working either. Nick got it working on the one machine and not the other machine. Because they have a DB1 and a DB2. They're a backup of each other.
Okay.
And he was banging on it, couldn't get the connection to work for the other one. And then, so Andrew came in, and Andrew was banging on it all night and couldn't get it to work. And I came in the morning and said, is it working? He goes, well, it's working for the first one, but it's not working for the second one. I can't figure it out. And I'm like, well, what's stopping the communication? Is it the firewall? And he goes, well, let's see. So he turns the firewall off and has no effect. So he said, I'm just going to delete all the firewall rules and re-put them in. So that's what he did. Exactly the way they were. Deleted them all, and then put them all back in exactly the way they were.
Wait a minute. So when you turn the firewall off, it fixed it.
Right.
And so then he was going to start to just individually enter the firewall rules to see which one caused the problem.
Yeah, there's only two firewall rules. So he just put them both back in.
Oh, okay.
So after he deleted them and put the firewall rules.
Was that the one?
No. Put the firewall rules in back exactly the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. It's Windows. The only answer we could come up with was it's freaking Windows.
Yeah.
So.
IFW.
Yeah.
So WTF? Well, so IFW.
So then to make sure it worked, what I did, because then he went home because he was there an hour over.
Mm-hmm.
What I did was I was logged into the backup server,
mm-hmm.
and I was watching all the backups run. They started at midnight, and they were still running it on the various servers at,
mm-hmm.
you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. They went till I think, about 11:30, and then they finished running. And then when they finished running, I manually ran a backup on each one of the servers to make sure it ran. And then we told the client, hey, it's all good. So,
okay.
All good.
Oh, so to make a long story long, what? It's always just catching up with you and what you did. It's always interesting. Anything else? That's pretty much it.
Okay. That was the big story for the week.
Yeah, well,
it was days. It took 3 days.
Wow. What
the bad thing is we set this cluster up a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so
and we overlooked the fact that we forgot to set backups up for their Windows. So it was good they didn't need any.
Oh, yeah. It was very good they didn't need any.
Right.
All right, well, let's see. What did I do? Well, you know, I have a dual monitor set up upstairs. I've got, you know, one of those stands, and I've got both monitors on them, and one has been not working for, it just, something just quit working, and then I had to go in and shift everything just to one monitor view. Again, this is a machine that primarily runs Windows because of some programs that I have that I can't run in Linux, unfortunately. So I was putting off troubleshooting it because I was thinking, oh, it's either the card or it's the cable or it's the monitor, and then I'm going to have to, you know, shift things around, try this, try that. So I finally sat down yesterday and worked on it. And as it turned out, was it yesterday or the day before? Anyway, as it turned out, apparently, you know those DVI connectors?
Yes.
Or connections? It's got the little blades and
right.
that, yeah. As it turned out, I think it's the DVI connection to the monitor because I put a VGA cable in there and plug that into the card because the card in the back of the computer
has
both.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, actually, it's got HDMI, VGA, and DVI. I think you can pick two of them or something like that. So I ended up using the VGA monitor, the cable, putting it in the back there, and it worked. So what I've done now is instead of that one running DVI, which didn't work, it now runs the VGA, and the DVI is on the other monitor, and that works. So I didn't have to spend any money except a little bit of time to figure that out because I was thinking, oh, my gosh, I should probably have to get another card or something's wrong here.
Well, did you just connect it back up and make sure it was a solid connection?
Yeah, I had done all that. I had usually I just screw one of those, you know, on the back of the cables. I screw one and just to make sure it's in there, but I made sure the card was seated. I did all of that. I blew out the dust and, you know, there's a little bit of dust in there. I blew all that out. Just all those typical things. And it wasn't until I started switching the cables and doing that, trying to eliminate causes, that I found out that it was a DVI connection for some reason.
It might not have been the DVI. Did you make sure the monitor was set to digital instead of analog?
Yeah, it will do that automatically.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
sometimes they don't. Sometimes you have to hit
it. But see, it was working. But see, it was working before, and it suddenly just quit working.
Well, if you bump the button and actually eventually changed it to an analog setting.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It's working. So I'm all good with the world.
Right.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
We have no release candidate, so the main line is still 3.9-RC4. And the stable updates are on Wednesday, 27th of March, 2013, at 1355, Greenwich Mean Time. Ben Hutchings released kernel 3.2.42 with 112 files changed, 844 lines inserted, and 445 lines deleted. And then on Thursday, the 28th of March, Greg Grohartman released at 12:22 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Grohartman released kernel 3.0.71 with 59 files changed, 353 lines inserted, and 268 lines deleted. And then on Thursday, March 28th, at 12:23 and 35 seconds, no, we don't need that, at 12:23 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Kohartman released kernel 3.4.38 with 78 files changed, 580 lines inserted, and 411 lines deleted. And then on Thursday, the 28th of March, at 12:24 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Kohartman released kernel 3.8.5 with 109 files changed, 778 lines inserted, and 683 lines deleted. You know what amazes me is that every time there's an update,
mm-hmm.
more lines are inserted than are deleted, always. So that means the kernel is always growing in size.
Well, when you think about, you know, there are more devices available, there's more this, more that, I guess it's just a fact of life. So it's going to become...
Eventually, it's going to be this... Yeah, eventually it's going to be this monster. You know?
Well, but the nice thing is that you have the ability... Actually, I almost thought about... this is Friday because I took most of Friday off. And I thought, oh, you know, I should just compile a kernel because I saw an article about how to do it.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I should just do that. I have done it before, but I think it was for...
I haven't done it. I used to do it to get my wireless drivers in the kernel.
Yeah.
And since my wireless drivers are in the kernel, I don't.
That's why it grows.
Right. I don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah, I just thought about doing it, and then I ended up working on my monitor.
No, this was a long time ago. I was using a proprietary card.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and my... my kernel developer quote of the week this week comes from Theodore Sal. He says, "So, I had always thought that Theodore Sal was a reasonably unique name. Apparently not. Because on the front page," this is referring to the front page of the Phoenix Comic Con website.
Yes.
"They were having comic artist Teddy Sal at the convention."
Oh, really?
"But they had up Teddy Sal's name underneath the picture of Theodore Sal, the Linux kernel hacker."
Because they probably thought it was
They thought that whoever posted it just did a Google search for an image and
took the
first one.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So I sent them a note. I sent the Comic-Con people a note, an email, and I'm assuming other people did also.
Yeah.
And
maybe you guys want to switch that up.
Right.
Contact Teddy.
Yeah.
Teddy for an image.
And get an image. But, it is fixed on their website. So
okay.
If you go there now,
okay.
You'll see the actual Teddy Sal, who is an American Indian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and fat.
Okay. Portly, so, I think, is what
we... Yeah, Paul K. Portly.
Not Portly. Okay. All right.
But, yeah, that was quite amusing that they had the wrong image up there.
It is.
So.
All right.
And that's the kernel news.
Well, thanks, Matt.
So.
Just kind of short and to the point.
Pretty much.
What's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
Okay.
So first up on 3.24, we have Tails. With an updated version of Tails, a Debian-based live DVD with a focus on user privacy and anonymity on the Internet has been released. Tails, the Amnesiac Incognito Live System version, is out. All users must upgrade as soon as possible.
You know, and I went out to their site because when you hear something like that, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, there must be a security flaw or something.
No, it's...
And it really wasn't...
That's just what they say when they update. Because that's what... The reason they say that is because whenever there's a new kernel, a new Linux kernel out,
mm-hmm.
Greg Kohartman always says that.
Mm.
Like, he'll say...
Okay.
The in his announcement, he says 3.8. Whatever is out.
Exactly.
All users of the 3.8 kernel must update.
Okay. All right. Well, that must be. But you know, while I was out there at their site, and they're, I think they're at point, what was it, 0.17, this release? 0.17, I believe.
Do. 0.17.1.
Yeah. 0.1. I was out there looking to see what they're going to have available in their 1.0 release, and at the rate they're going with their numbering, that probably won't be out there for another 3 years. But it's interesting. They've got something, they're working, are going to be working on something called MAC Changer.
To spoof your MAC address?
Yeah, and to not spoof it, but to change it. That's what I will say.
Yeah.
But they,
you can do that now.
Well, but for some reason, and that's what I thought.
Because I have done that in Panera Bread. Because Panera Bread has that timeout limit of a half hour during, like, lunch or dinner, where then they cut your internet off. So then you got to spoof a new MAC address to get back in.
That's pretty cool. I'll take notes from you after the show. But anyway, no, it's a tool to change it. But for some reason, I think maybe they're approaching it a little bit different. I didn't go into detail, but they what they're trying to do is they're trying to decide the use cases they want to support with this, and then how to deal with them. Plus, also the merits of the various implementation options for that. They were also talking about, it's kind of funny, they were talking about that you probably don't want to do that with a public computer. You only want to do it with one that you own because, well, first of all, it's probably locked down so that you can get in there and do
and
that.
The public computer is going to be running Windows.
True. That's true. So. Yeah, so anyway, but that's something that they're going to be coming out with. All right, so on to the next one.
All right. Next up we have on 325, OpenELEC. 3.0.0 was released. Stefan Rau has announced the release of OpenELEC 3.0.0, a specialist Linux distribution built around XBMC, the open source entertainment media hub.
Yeah, you know, I thought about doing a review, doing my distro review of OpenELEC, but then I'd have to sit around all week watching movies and reporting on it. but actually, last month, and I guess I can still say that because this is still the last day of March, but in February, they had announced that they'd teamed up with Arctic to put out a media center. And it was priced to move, and it was priced so well that I thought, oh, this is pretty cool. It was like $229. I thought, maybe, yeah, I got that my refund and all. Maybe you should get one of these. It was sold out. They weren't available.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it really looked pretty slick. It was all set up, configured, and ready to go.
All right. Next up, we have Zeven OS on 326 with Zeven OS 3.0. Big day for 3.0 releases. 3.0 Neptune. Lezek Lesnar has announced the release of Zeven OS 3.0 Neptune Edition, a Debian-based desktop Linux distribution for 64-bit computer systems with a customized KDE as the default desktop.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that they've changed now, instead of using the standard KDE launcher, what they're doing now is they've changed the default launcher to Lancelot, which it's similar to the KDE launcher, but it's got...
Are you talking about?
The launcher in the corner, you know, the menu launcher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they've changed that. But another thing that they've done, too, is that they've split the repositories. Instead, I think they just had a single repository, but what they've done now is they've taken the Neptune config and apps, and they've made that into a repository, a set of, you know, repositories, and they've taken the KDE, and they've got that as a separate one. And so I think what that's going to do for them is...
The stock KDE or their KDE?
They just said the KDE repository, but because it's customized, they may have some tweaks in there, and I think for them to split that out was going to be easier for updates and that type of thing.
Right.
So I noticed that. The other thing, too, I saw is that they've removed Pulse Audio for better audio experience and no crackling sounds anymore, so...
Well, Pulse Audio is fantastic. And just because they can't figure out how to use it doesn't make it bad. Let's just leave it at that.
All right.
Moving on.
We'll move on. But I did get a chuckle out of that.
Next up on 327, we have Pardis Linux 2013. Pardis Linux 2013 has been released. This is the first stable release of the new Debian-based Pardis Linux with GNOME and KDE desktops. Currently available in Turkish only. From the release announcement, Pardis 2013 Corporate is released and available in four flavors. GNOME, KDE, currently this distribution is only available in Turkish, but the situation will change in the future. It says four flavors, but then it only says two desktops.
Yeah, I'm not sure what
the... Oh, because each desktop is then available in 32-bit and 64-bit.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so those are the flavors.
Yes.
You know, and it's funny that I saw that they'd only released this one in Turkish. Every release prior to this as part was multilingual, but I think they're going to, as you indicated, or at least as the announcement indicated, they're going to be changing that. But did you know that Pardis was originally a live CD-only fork of Gentoo? I didn't know that. But they also, they're the distro that came out with Captan, which is that once you install and you go in for the first time, and I encountered this in Chakra, I went through this very polished set of steps to finalize the configuration of my system, and I was very impressed with it. And then I found out it was Captan, which is Captain.
In Turkish.
Yeah, yeah, and it allows you to finalize all those other settings. So, and other distros are using it, as I said, Chakra, but it came from Pardis.
Next up, we have Sparky Linux 2.1 released on 3/28. Game over. Pavel Pajansky has announced the release of Sparky Linux 2.1 Game Over Edition, a Debian-based distribution with a customized LXDE desktop and a good collection of games.
Yeah, they do have a good collection of games. They updated Steam for Linux to the latest stable version. Now, what they've done is they've indicated that it's been installed in what they term the normal way, meaning that there's a launcher and the dependencies installed only. But you, as the user going in, you've got to agree to the agreement. You know, you have that little checkbox thing you got to do, and then download the client for the first run. And once that's done, then you've got your Steam. But they've got tons of games in that thing. They do. And
all right.
Yeah, it's I think it's a 3.2 gig download.
That's a big-ass download.
It is.
All right. Well, moving on 3/28, we also had Scientific Linux 6.4. A little behind there, Scientific Linux. Pat Reinhickey has announced the release of Scientific Linux 6.4, a distribution built from source package for Red Hat Enterprise 6.4 and enhanced with software suitable for use in scientific and academic environments.
Yeah, and on top of that, a couple of weeks ago, Scientific Linux rsync server was moved to new hardware, so new setup should result in faster, more reliable rsyncs for all of their mirror sites, so that hopefully will...
We're not mirroring them.
Okay. Well, whoever is, that should help.
We mirror a lot of stuff. We don't mirror them. We mirror CentOS.
And Arch.
And Fedora, and some other stuff. So,
Do you mirror any Debian-based, or is it all IPM?
I think we mirror Debian.
Do you?
I don't know. Let me go to, it's mirror.nexus.net.
All right. Well, while you do that, we'll go ahead and get ourselves set up for our top five of the week.
Oh, I did not. I gotta scroll down and...
And refresh?
Last seven and refresh.
That's right. And hanging in. Let me go ahead and read them all.
Not yet.
I'll read them, and you just you'll just say trending up like you.
Yeah.
Do.
Oh, okay. Now you can.
Okay. And hanging in there by its little fingernails there at.
Yeah, barely.
14/17. We have OpenSUSE.
And trending down.
I know. I just spent my $5. at number four this week with 1686, we've got Debian.
And trending up.
And coming in at number three with 1944, we have Magia.
And trending down.
And at number two, we've got Ubuntu with 2017.
And trending down.
And at the top of the list... We've got Mint with...
Gotta love that minty goodness.
That's right. Sorry about that. With 4,095.
And trending down.
And, of course, this is DistroWatch, and those are just simply hits to the site.
Right.
Nothing scientific as far as this goes. So I don't know if we're going to do that that distro rank this week. Are we prepared to do that, Matt, or are we just going to say, oh, it probably didn't change, we'll just move on? To
yeah, that sounds
review.
Good to me. Well, he did notice something this week, though. Did you see that, what he noticed?
Who? He.
The distro rank guy.
Oh, no. Uh-uh. What did he notice?
That Bing has biased search results.
Oh, I think I saw that story. I didn't realize it came from distro right
now. Yeah.
Oh. Is Bing biased against Ubuntu? Well, I think somebody was saying that it may be because they don't have as much index content as, say, Google does.
Yeah.
And so it may...
That might be the case for the overall results, because if you look at Linux Mint, Arch Linux, and FreeBSD, they're all about the same percentage different between the two, which would account for that. But Ubuntu is dramatically less than
10%.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see the numbers until just now.
That's when you put the Ubuntu Linux, Ubuntu and Linux together. And if you just do Ubuntu, search Ubuntu, the results are much closer to the same percentage as the others.
Yeah.
It's only when you put Ubuntu and Linux together. And there are some possible reasons for that are, like Ubuntu on their main page doesn't use the word Linux at all.
So I guess it's come back to haunt them?
Yes.
Okay. Well, and I don't know if we've had any changes from distro rank. And as I think we've said before, you know, they use an algorithm that helps in the weighting of these.
Yeah, the top five looks exactly the same.
Yeah, so there should be no surprise there. And going from top to bottom, it's Ubuntu, Mint, Red Hat, Arch, and then Debian.
Correct. So,
and that's I think that makes sense to me.
So. It does.
Okay.
And now, if you go and look at those mirrors, WeMirror, Apache, Arch, CentOS, CPAN, we do mirror Debian. We have two Debian mirrors, Debian CD and Debian. I mean, mirror EPL, Fedora, Gentoo.
Oh, really? Gentoo.
We mirror GNU.
All right.
Hiren's boot CD. JPackage, kernel.org, we're a kernel.org mirror. Linux Mint, OpenSUSE.
Wow.
RepoForge, RPM Fusion, Slackware.
Don't look at me.
Ubuntu Release and Ubuntu.
Oh, really?
And then PHP.
Wow. Oh, I like PHP. Okay. Impressive.
So.
Props to your company.
Yeah, Mark does all that. He's a great guy.
All right. Tell him we think it's fantastic.
Okay.
Mary, what's on SDA 6 this week?
This week's review is, are you ready for this, Matt?
Yes.
Lubuntu Extra Life Extension Linux. Or, it's a mouthful, let me tell you. It's a pretty lengthy name. Or LXLE, yet another acronym.
That begins with L.
Yeah. Yeah. But before you groan, not another Ubuntu derivative review. Let me add that this is a remastered version, but it's got some things in there that I thought were kind of interesting, at least to me, and hopefully people will find it interesting. And so I thought, you know, I'm gonna look into this a little bit further, and I did. So it's based on, as you probably have surmised from the name, it's based on I don't even know what to call it. Lexel?
What?
LXLE.
Why don't we just say LXLE?
Lexi. LXLE.
LXLE.
That decided. Apologies to everyone who had to endure that. It's based on Lubuntu 12.04, and it's been, as I said, remastered for compatibility with older equipment, and according to the site, without sacrificing the environment of programs, features, and aesthetics. So I wanted to review it because it wasn't Lubuntu with a different brand slapped on, at least for the most part, although a couple spots, you know, the Ubuntu thing, or the Lubuntu popped up. But anyway, so they've assembled some additional tools into it, and including a quick starter app, launcher, random wallpaper, etc. I'll be talking about that as we move in. So let's go ahead and take a look at the vitals. As I said earlier, it's called Lubuntu Extra Life Extension Linux, or Alexa-ly. That's kind of slow, though, doesn't it? You know, I tried to figure out who the maintainer was. It just was impossible to figure that out. I just could not find it, because this is relatively new. The distro's latest birthday was on March 24, 2013. It's a derivative of course, Lubuntu / Debian. The kernel used here is 3.2.0-40, and the review desktop is LXDE. Let's see, first in the live environment, since it's a Asterisk Ubuntu-based distro, it correctly handled all of my graphics and my wireless. You know, again, I put this on my Bemis. It's the desktop. Actually, we can mention this right now.
Yeah.
We're running the Google Hangout off this distro.
Yes.
And it handled
it's handling it very well.
It did. So it handled it very well. So anyway, wireless, the IWL3945 module and I915 graphics module, all were there, working fine. Let's take a look at the defaults. Now the browser, what they've got installed by default are both Chromium and Firefox. I always find it kind of interesting, if you're going to install Chromium, why don't you put Iceweasel in there? Because Firefox has got, you know what I'm talking about?
I agree. If you're gonna go to the extent of putting Chromium in, then you should use Iceweasel.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't care about Iceweasel and Firefox differences, why the heck are you giving a crap about Chromium and Chrome?
Yeah, I thought that same thing.
All
right, the Office Suite, it uses, you'll be happy to hear this, Matt, it uses LibreOffice 4.0.2.
Current, bleeding edge.
I know, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. The mail client is Claus Mail, and the file manager is PCMan FM 0.9.10. And, all right, so what's immediately obvious about this distro is the attractive desktop wallpaper. These wallpapers are beautiful, interesting to look at, etc. The distro maintainer included 50 different wallpaper images in Alexa Lee Linux. Each time you reboot the system, a different wallpaper is selected. Older computers will not feel shortchanged at all as far as an attractive desktop display goes. A single LXDE panel, LXDE there, I got to put the accent on the right spot, at the bottom holds the typical utilities. Icons for standard disk and activities are on the left, and in the left meaning on the left side of the desktop, and what desktop would be complete without a Conti display on the right? It's there displaying various snippets of system information, uptime, monitoring functions, the typical things you expect to see on Conti. So I went quickly to the install phase of my testing. There's really not much to report on this process because, remember, it's Ubuntu, and they've got a very tight and very nice install process. But during partitioning, one of the available file systems is ButterFS. A couple of things about ButterFS, of course, it supports partitions up to 16 exabytes and files up to that size, too. Now, contrast that with EXT4, which only supports partitions up to 1 exabyte. So my movie and music collection now has room to grow.
I think I would be personally entirely fine with 1 exabyte.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I would too. But I couldn't pass up the joke. But I decided to format the partitions using BetterFS, which is one of the available options. And I'm including a little link to some information comparing EXT4 and BetterFS. I thought it was kind of interesting, so I'm including that in the show notes. I rebooted smoothly. One small item of note, however, is if you're going to this is to the distro maintainer. If you're going to rebrand a member of the Ubuntu family of distros, it's always better to completely replace the logos because there were in some cases it was rebranded. In some cases, they just kind of left the Ubuntu thing, the logo and name and all that there, which I guess is okay. It's no big deal, but sometimes just for that little extra
power. If you're going to change the name of a distribution,
you
need to make sure that the branding is fixed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the first update, then I rebooted. So the first update appeared to successfully complete, but at the end of the process, a package operation failed message appeared. It looked like a newer version of libgcc was installed than what LibreOffice Core required. And the package system was reported as broken. I wasn't off to a good start. I later discovered that LXLE comes with the PPA for LibreOffice, which is why they can offer 4.0,
right.
You know, in Ubuntu it's 3.6 or whatever it is. Anyway, but they could offer that, which appeared to be then also a newer version of libgcc, and the one in Ubuntu was... I think there was some confusion there as far as the different versions.
Well, yeah, because like a package might say, I require version .. instead of version .. or newer.
Yes, and so that is what caused the problem, and then it broke some things. So I just simply I know I could probably do this at the command line, but I just simply went into Synaptic and fixed it, and it was good. And by the way, too, I was able to open LibreOffice 4.0 because I wanted to check and see if that was going to have any impact on the operation of it, and it did not appear to impact it at all. It opened up just fine. So anyway, but there was a second round of updates, and I was able to successfully complete those, and I also had to reboot as part of that, which was no big deal. I took care of that.
Why? Because you got a new kernel?
No, I think just because I just rebooted just to put it all up and start fresh.
Because the only time you absolutely have to reboot is when you get a new kernel.
Yes, that's correct. Another addition to Alexa Lee, Linux.
Just say Alexa Lee.
What's going to happen, though, is when I saw the LXDE, it's just going to be crazy. But anyway, it's the YPPA manager. Now, this tool manages a robust set of PPA repositories and PPA repositories that you've added to your package manager. Now, this distro comes with 11 PPAs already in place, which I...
Really?
That really caught me by surprise, including a PPA for LibreOffice, which I mentioned before, so that it runs 4.0. And as I mentioned, I think the difference between the libraries, between the PPA and then the standard Lubuntu is what caused the problem. But, again, I got past it without too much of an issue. I opened the Control Center, and the Lubuntu Control Center title greeted me. And, again, that goes back to that whole issue about rebranding. It contains all the tools you see when using Lubuntu, which includes swapping my mouse buttons. Worked perfectly for me because, that's my little...
Right, that's your little pet peeve.
My little hot button. A little mouse button. LXLE uses the standard Lubuntu update manager for updates that are pushed out by the distro. It also has a software update center, which is accessed by clicking the add software icon on the desktop. When I did that, it's the Deepin software center.
Right.
Again, from Deepin Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Which used to be HiWeed.
Which used to be what?
HiWeed.
HiWeed?
HiWeed. It's Chinese. But yeah, that's what it used to be called, but now it's called Deepin.
All right.
But anyway, it comes from the Chinese distro of the same name. It opened to present me with a variety of options for software installation. It's similar to Ubuntu's in sophistication and appearance. Everything was neatly organized with install recommendations on the right side. Across the top, icons provided me with options to A, review install packages, B, perform upgrades, C, check repositories, and D, download, which I think... will show what you're downloading, although I didn't really get a chance to try that out. I suspect that it may be linked into the download folder so that if you've downloaded something there, like a dev file or something, it'll show up there. That's my thinking, but I didn't have time to check it out. I apologize. I was working on my monitors. I had 11 upgrades and commenced applying them. Returning to the laptop later, I still showed them listed. See, this was the odd thing because I then had 11 upgrades, over the course of several days that... this one nice thing about this distro is that there were upgrades, ongoing upgrades. But when I looked in the software center, it showed 11, and I applied them, but I came back later, and they're still listed. And
it was the same 11?
Yeah.
You're sure?
Yeah, it was. But here's what I did. I closed the DSC, the Deepin Software Center, and opened up again. They were gone. So it's almost as if the screen didn't refresh.
Did you try refreshing the screen?
No, I just closed it and reopened it. All right. Quit picking on me, man. Tony, he's not here today to help.
Yeah.
All right. LXLE includes a quick start launcher, and according to the configuration instructions, you access it by these steps. It's really pretty slick. All you have to do is hold the Alt key and tap Z. And again, because of the proximity, it's just a quick 1-2 with your, with your fingers. And then you start typing the name of the program you want to launch. Again, that's just like, I think, KRunner and KDE. And
Alt F2.
Yep, exactly. But it's really, nice and slick, easy to access because the two keys are close to one another.
The Alt F2 is fine. I use my thumb and my middle finger.
Right, but here, it's like a rocket.
I don't know. I'm so used to Alt F2. Uh-huh. It would take me a while to probably...
It's like an octave on a piano keyboard. You have two keys next to each other, or you have the C that's way 8 keys over. It's that kind of thing. So, but anyway...
I'll take your word for it.
Okay, thanks. all right, and the Alex Salee's website includes configuration information for the distro, including Conkey. I decided to change the network interface because it was monitoring because it was set up to monitor F0, and I wanted to monitor WLAN 0 because I was wireless at the time. So anyway, I replaced F0 with WAN 0 and saved my changes, but for some reason, most of Conkey was no longer visible on my desktop. I know it was. I was very careful about what I replaced, and I was pretty certain I hadn't gotten rid of an extra space or something.
And you didn't do a cp.org for original on the config file, did you?
No. No, but I'm sure the issue was mine. Maybe the way I edited the file, but I still had the system uptime. The system uptime was still up there. But all of the information below it was not visible. So, I don't know. I know it was a sad thing. But that was all right. I accept the responsibility. It was probably me, operator error.
I'm sure it was, too.
Now, LXLE has some interesting programs. The first one here is called Osmo. It's a personal organizer, and it's also a icon on the desktop. It includes a calendar, address book, task manager, a notepad. I've included a link to this particular program. Also something they've got called Home Bank. It's a free, easy personal accounting for everyone, according to the information I found. Now, there's a welcome screen that includes the option to open an example file, which I assume to be already maybe deposits, withdrawals, calendar dates, that type of thing. And so it sounded like a good idea to check it out. However, there was no help file to be had. The example file was not available, and then I checked on help, and it wasn't there either. Instead, you're prompted to set up an account. It'll track bank accounts, credit cards, and other sources of cash, and send the data directly overseas to China. That was a joke. Those Chinese hackers. The next thing is they have available is called Fast Forecast. What this does is it uses the ZCTA, the zip code location information, and pulls the National Weather Service forecast for your area. I appreciated seeing the weather for York, Pennsylvania when I was using the live environment, and there was no obvious place to enter my zip code to change it, but I later found out from the site they've got a README page that shows
York,
you how to
change Pennsylvania?
It. Yeah, well, that's the default, and so that gives
Is
me...
Is that where they're located?
That gives me a clue as to where the maintainer probably lives, yeah. So it's York, Pennsylvania.
That's just outside of Harrisburg.
I don't know.
I do.
But you're from there.
No.
You're from PA, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but PA's a big state.
I know. It takes me 6 hours to drive across it.
Yes.
When I go out to Connecticut.
Yes. PA's a big state.
But anyway, so it did contain instructions for changing that, and I did. And then when I opened it up, it gave me Metro Detroit's weather. But again, it's set up just like you see it for the National Weather Service. There's no nice little sun or anything like that. It's just basic text. So, and I appreciate that because, it gets right to the point. So maybe I should too. Skype comes pre-installed. I was kind of impressed on that. And then there's something called GeoAlternative. It's a tool to assist the administrator in selecting which programs provide specific services for users by default. So I guess you can go in there and kind of set that up. It also includes OpenShot, which I was also impressed that was included. Again, because this distro has some minimum.
Yeah, aren't they aiming to extend the life of older, and they're using LibreOffice 4.0, OpenShot.
Yeah. Well, see, I think it's that dilemma that I think people have where you want the latest and greatest, but then on the other hand, if you're shooting for something older, you want to try to achieve that too. So you have these competing objectives, and I think we're seeing that. But again, I installed it on this 2 gig laptop and it was fine. But I was impressed with
2 gigs of RAM, any distro would be fine.
Yeah. But anyway, so I was surprised to see it there.
I want something that's going to run like, I want something that's going to run like that on 512.
Well, it might take, I'll take a gig of RAM out of this thing and see what happens. I had it there. And then Liferea, the Linux feed reader, news aggregator for news feeds, that was there. They may have been thinking ahead with Google Reader going out the door July 1st. They also had something called Parcelite, which is a clipboard manager. It's basically a stripped-down, basic features-only clipboard manager, and it's a small memory footprint for those who like to keep things simple. So, it also had a an interesting music player that I really found that I liked, and it's called Guaya Decay. It's a very capable Linux music player developed and maintained by Juan Rios Olivares. And that's why I say it's Guaya Decay. And that's actually a ravine on the Canary Islands. What I like about this music player is it's got an effective mix of simplicity and capability, which I think is not that easy to maintain. It's got cool V, and it's got cool VU meters, too. It comes with shoutcast.com already set up. 5,000 radio stations already there. You can check by genre, or if you've got a particular one that you like, you can just easily get to it. So I liked it so much, I went to the site and donated to that project. So, and when I got there and checked it out, I found that Vast One, remember the distro I did last week?
Yes.
He had donated to this project too. But anyway, I enjoyed this. Overall, I enjoyed this distro. Again, it's based on Ubuntu or Lubuntu, so there's a certain set of expectations that, for the most part, were met. Any of those little issues I talked about were probably due to me. I think that Conky one specifically. So anyway, I give it 3.5 cups of blonde coffee served hot.
All right.
Yeah. So that's again LXLE Linux or Lubuntu long term.
What?
Well, that's the whole name.
Life extension.
Extra life extension.
Yeah.
Based on the long-term version of
Lubuntu.
So there you have it.
All right.
Boy, I tell you, I barely got through that thing.
Yes, you did.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
First up, we have Wind River introduces the first carrier-grade Linux that is also Yocto-compatible. On March 27th, Wind River announced it had registered the Wind River carrier-grade Linux with the Linux Foundation carrier-grade Linux 5.0 requirements for compliance. Several years ago, Wind River began bringing their development into compliance with the Yocto standards. They reached Yocto compatibility in 2012. The Yocto project is also managed by the Linux Foundation. Their goal for the Yocto project is to bring some uniformity to embedded Linux development. Typical requirements for carrier-grade Linux are 5 to 6 nines of uptime, greater security, and the ability to handle massive network traffic. You can find more information about Wind River carrier-grade Linux here, linked in the show notes. You can find more information about carrier-grade Linux registration requirements here, link in the show notes.
We'll have to get a sound clip of that.
And you can find out about the about Yocto here. Link in the show notes.
All right.
Next up, we have Red Hat puts beat down on patent troll. Red Hat was not the direct defendant in this case. Rackspace was. However, if you remember all of that SCO nastiness back in 2003, Red Hat started the Open Source Assurance Program in 2004. The purpose of the program was to indemnify its users from litigation for using its products. Well, when Unilock USA sued Rackspace over U.S. patent 5,892,697, covering the processing of floating point numbers, to make a long story short, Judge Davis disallowed the patent because mathematical algorithms are not patentable under U.S. patent law. And somehow I think I missed a whole sentence there. In my story, it was supposed to say, do, 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 do.
How do you spell that?
covering the processing of floating point numbers. It was supposed to say something to the effect of, like, they didn't realize that they were going to be taken on Red Hat when they did this because of Red Hat's
And
indemnifying.
That's right, and their deep pockets.
Yeah, they took on much deeper pockets than they had anticipated.
Right.
And this is what Alan Schoenbaum, Rackspace's general counsel, had to say about it. We salute Red Hat for its outstanding defense and for standing firm with its customers in defeating this patent troll. We hope that many more of these spurious software patent lawsuits will be dismissed on similar grounds. Also, Rod Tiller, Red Hat's Assistant General Counsel for IP, had this to say. NPE, which stands for Non-Practicing Entity, patent lawsuits are a chronic and serious problem for the technology industry. Such lawsuits, which are frequently based on patents that should never have been granted, typically cost millions of dollars to defend. These suits are a plague on innovation and economic growth.
Yeah, humanity.
Yeah. Right. And job creation. Courts can help address this problem by determining the validity of patents early and with appropriate care. In this case, Judge Davis did just that and set a great example for future cases. Now, I just have one thing to say.
Just one?
Well, this is, you can see the difference in the lawyers here.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rackspace's general counsel referred to them as patent trolls,
mm-hmm.
which is the common vernacular.
Common term,
right,
yeah.
right. And Red Hat's counsel referred to them as an NPE.
Oh.
A non-practicing entity.
Yeah.
Which means they own the patent but aren't using it.
Yeah.
So, I just thought that was a little humorous. And this is the very meaning of indemnification. 9 years ago, Red Hat said that they would defend their customers from patent troll lawsuits, and they have stood by their word. So
good for them.
Good on you, Red Hat.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, some of those patents are they're ridiculous.
And then we have Patrick Volkerding announces switch to MariaDB.
I saw that. I almost included that in some of the little links and things of interest, but I didn't.
So, on March 23rd, the announcement appeared on the front page of the Slackware site. They had a poll on Linux questions that showed an overwhelming majority of Slackware users were in favor of the switch. Now, I don't include these numbers in my story. I just say an overwhelming number, but do you want the actual numbers?
Yeah.
61 in favor of and 21 not in favor of.
The word overwhelming.
Well,
it's up thousands.
Right.
Right. Well.
He goes on to say that they are not making the switch due to any licensing issues. He does, however, cite significant user confusion over that matter as a concern.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what Patrick had to say about it. In the vast majority of situations, MariaDB is entirely compatible with existing MySQL databases and will drop right in with no changes required. There is an excellent article here, link in the show notes, on the exact differences between MariaDB and MySQL.
All right. I hope I don't have to make that noise when I... I'm not even going to try.
Give it up, Mary.
Yeah. No, but I did see that. I did see that reference to moving.
Yeah. Oh, I saw it on Slackware's front page where I saw it. So.
Okay. You go there every day?
I go there quite often.
Okay.
I go to a lot of places quite often to find news.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Well, I've got a few little things of interest. I did write news stories about them, so I probably won't go into any detail, important detail. But there was an article. I don't know if you saw this. This was at ArsTechnica.com. It's LibreOffice adoption soaring, but OpenOffice
is still the king.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's a link in that story to the blog of an IBM guy who wrote the article or the blog post, and he goes into excruciating detail about this. And I think it all boils down to statistics and how you can take statistics and you can.
I looked at it
and how you turn it around.
I looked at it and then decided it was TLDR. DR.
TL what?
TLDR.
What is that?
Too long, did not read.
Well, All right, but I did read every word of it, but I did skim it, just taking a look. So yeah, maybe I was doing that, reading it. But you know, again, depending on a number of downloads over various periods of time, this kind of thing, you can make something look far better than maybe it really is. And I think OpenOffice, of course, has the luxury of having that brand out there for years.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking like 9 years.
They were
maybe
the open source,
right?
Productivity suite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it made sense. But anyway, I thought the article was kind of interesting, and for anyone who wants to take a look at the IBM guy's blog, I'll have the link in the... Okay, Matt, go ahead and do that. Link in the show. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next one. Now, you may have seen this too, Matt, but it kind of caught my eye. ZFS, according to this article on H Online, ZFS on Linux is ready for wide-scale deployment. Did you see that? Do you believe that it is?
I do. The only problem with using ZFS is it requires a massive amount of RAM in the machine.
Yeah, and that's what I saw.
Because it does on-the-fly file deduplication as part of at the file system level, so it just takes a huge amount of RAM.
By like how much? 100?
No, you have to have at least 8 gigs.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nothing, no.
At least. And that's not on a server. That will be on a desktop.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll stick with Butter. That I use. Actually, I'll stick with EXT4 for the time being anyway. So something better comes along that I feel comfortable using. But anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting to see, because I know that that's been in the works for a while. So I thought, I'll make a mention of that.
ZFS is great. If you've got a machine with the RAM in it, that file system's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is you've got to have a machine with that RAM in it.
Yeah, that's true. The other item that I saw that really that I found pretty interesting was I don't know if you saw the experiment or the test that they did on Amazon S3 buckets, and the fact that there's a hole.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
it
a hole and several thousand of them.
Yeah,
there.
They're leaky.
Oh yeah, I posted that out on my Google Plus page, and I went in there and I'll tell you what, they had some searches you could run. I did it, and I'm not kidding you. I had in my list of Google results, I had links to Excel spreadsheets. I mean, it's like these people.
Lots of leaky corporate data out
so
there.
So then I got nervous about my Amazon S3 buckets. I went in there, and they were still all empty. So well, there's nothing in there, but I think it looked like I was only sharing it with myself. So, but anyway, it just makes you think twice about when you put stuff
those,
out there.
If those shares aren't set up right.
Mm-hmm.
Woe be to you.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. And on one of my projects, the customer, they're actually, my product is part of a larger knowledge management initiative that they're putting into place. And so my product kind of fits into the spot in this bigger portal strategy. And the customer project manager is using this collaborative tool. And so I upload my... we kind of have discussion streams, and we have files that get uploaded. And when I was uploading or down, I think maybe it was downloading, I noticed that in the URL there was just a little brief flash of S3, Amazon, or AWS, whatever it was. I thought, oh, that's where this is being stored.
AWS.
So I thought that was pretty interesting to see. Yeah, but that was before I even saw this, so I'm hoping that they've got it all nice.
They got a leaky bucket.
I hope they do. Anyway, but I thought the story itself is very interesting there to read. Almost as interesting as that one last week about the botnet that scanned the whole internet.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, moving.
Did you happen to run across any of the world's largest DDoS attack?
Oh, yeah, Spamhaus?
Yeah, Spamhaus and Cloudflare.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, 300 gigabytes a second.
Wow.
And you know what else?
No.
They didn't take the Spamhaus list down. You know who did it?
Somebody in Russia?
No, Britain. Because Spamhaus added them to added their web hosting services to a blacklist, because basically they'll host anybody as long as it's not child porn.
Yeah.
And So they were hosting all these spammers, and so Spam House just said, anybody there is no good. And it pissed them off. I'm like, why would it piss you off? I mean, you've got to realize that if you're hosting spammers, you're going to get blacklisted, bottom line.
Yeah.
We go to great lengths at my work to ensure that our IPs don't get blacklisted.
Mm-hmm.
All the time we're getting warnings. We're getting spam from this one. We're getting spam. And we shut them down, and then we
send a note to the customer.
Secure
your system.
Where a lot of times it's the actual customer, and then they go away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because they're a spammer?
Right.
Okay. Oh, yeah, a spam. It's just a scourge. And then I saw a story, and I didn't really see it written anywhere, but it was it's like a little snippet of an interview about email, taxing email, like a penny an email or something like that, or the first 100 are free, and then you tax after that, which, you and I would not be impacted by it, because we don't send 100 emails a day.
No, but that's ridiculous. You can't do that. That was not a serious article.
April Fool's is on Monday. I think in some circles, again, I just caught part of it, so I don't have all the details. But I just think, how do you shut spam down? I just don't think you do either. You either have very good spam filters, or some other mechanism, I guess. Someone tried from our chat.
Yeah.
To use in production. It worked. Actually, I don't know if it worked.
Yes.
It did work. All right. Hey, Tony is in the chat.
Why is he in the chat?
Let's kick him out.
I'm going to de-op him and kick him.
Yeah, so I'll keep going. I've got my KDE corner today.
Yeah, the KDE corner.
Yeah, I've got a couple of things here. First off, KDE Key Time episode 14 was released. This episode was mainly a Q&A session. The developers were answering listener questions, so I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Matt, you didn't do that little thing.
What?
I didn't cue you, though.
Oh, link in the show notes?
Yeah. There you go. All right. And then the other story that I have, and I think, Matt, you and I talked a little bit about this, but KDE narrowly avoided disaster.
They did. It was
Git repository getting blown away, or at least...
Almost. They had one copy.
Yes.
And they wouldn't have lost all the data, because all the maintainers had tarballs of all the data. What they would have lost was all the Git metadata, which with all the commits and all that stuff, and it would have been a horrible thing to try to rebuild it. Well, it would have been impossible to recreate.
Yeah, that's true, because that stuff... So they narrowly avoided that.
Yes.
And then it was reported by one of the developers, or somebody from the project, and then there was a whole host of responses that saying, oh, you should never do this. That necessitated another
report. Well, hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's easy to say that, I guess. But anyway, the good news is they're okay, and they recognize that they're going to have to take a little bit of a different approach.
Yeah, they have done that different approach. They've set their mirrors up differently now.
Yeah, so that won't happen, we hope. So let's see here. I think that's really all that I have got for my.
Tony is in the channel both as an op and as a non-op.
All right. But anyway, so we are. I think that's it for the news.
That's all your KDE corner.
Yeah, that's all I got.
That's a little KDE corner this week.
So this week's. I don't know if you want to catch the time for this, but...
What?
So you can splice in there a little...
I'll do it when I come back.
All right. So this week's tool from the SMLR Toolbox is for system administrators. And, well, aren't we all system administrators? It's called PHP SysInfo. Now, this is a customizable PHP script that displays status information about your system in an easy-to-read web page. Now, the system information is organized into various sections. You first of all have something called System Vital, and that's going to contain things like your host name, the IP address that It's listening on the kernel version, distro name you're using, the uptime, last boot, current users, load averages, those kinds of things. There's also hardware information, which, of course, contains the processors. I actually break them out individually. There's separate sections for PCI devices, IDE, and SCSI devices. It's all nicely organized there. Then memory usage. You've got your physical memory, the kernel, plus applications, buffer, cache, disk swap. All of that information is
right,
there, too.
Yeah. And there's other add-ons you can put in there, too.
Yes. And the other thing, one thing I like about it is it will show your mounted file systems. And it looked to me what it does is it goes in and it reads FSTab and combines the settings that appear in FSTab with whatever status settings that maybe is pulling out of proc or something like that, that just shows how much of those disks have been used, how much is free, that type of thing. So
I cannot start my web server. It won't start, so I can't talk about it.
Okay. Well, we're going to have... Actually, Tony installed it, and he agreed with me that
it
was pretty cool.
It was, and I added a bunch of the modules, too.
Oh, did you?
That's, I turned them on, yeah, so...
Oh, shoot. So
I can't...
Not
gonna
be
able to
do
no.
All right, but there's going to be a link to this in the show notes, and there's also a tutorial for installation incorporating other tools into PHP SysInfo, so I'm going to include a link for that, too. It's kind of like... if you've used Webmin is just, it's sort of like
Webmin allows you to actually administer the system.
Yeah, and this just is mainly just a readout.
Yes, it just tells you what's going on with your system. Mm-hmm. It's totally different.
Yeah. It is mostly different. I mean, Webmin...
Totally different.
Webmin has the added functionality of allowing you to actively administer it. This doesn't. This just shows the readouts. But Webmin does show readouts.
Very limited, very minimal. Nothing like PSP info.
Oh, okay. All right. So
PHP info.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell it is.
Or yet another acronym. But anyway, so that's this week's tool. Check it out. I think you'll...
Gray Links, I think is his name, has posted a link to their Git site.
He did.
Our chat.
Thank you very much, Gray Links. What was I going to say about this? Oh, yes, you've got to have Apache. In other words, you've got to have...
Yeah,
you've
got to have a LAMP stack running with PHP, not Perl.
Yeah.
Because I had to install Apache and PHP, which now appears to be broken somehow.
Well, you should be able to start it, though.
I did. No, it won't start.
Line?
It gives me an error. Job for HTTP service failed. See syscontrol status, HTTP service, and journal control -XN for details.
Wow.
And it was working fine yesterday. I did.
Fedora?
Hey.
Huh, I wonder what happened there.
I don't know. Mm. But it was working fine yesterday.
Okay. Convention scene for the month of April 2013. Oh, let's see here what we've got. First of all, only have three this month, Matt, but we've got the Linux Foundation Collaboration Summit 2013. Now, this is an exclusive, so I don't think we got invitations.
No, I did not.
This is an exclusive invitation-only summit gathering of core kernel developers, distribution maintainers, ISVs, and end users, system vendors, and other community organizations. I bet you get an invitation if you belong to the Linux Foundation, maybe.
No.
Okay, you have to have some other...
You have to be an active maintainer.
Okay. Well, no, but they're talking about system vendors and other community organizations.
Well, that's people with distros.
End users? They specifically said end users. I'm going to find out. Yeah.
Maybe.
I'll link to this, but this is April 15th through the 17th at the Park 55 Hotel in San Francisco, California. I'm gonna score an invitation next year.
That'll
be my project. This year's project is to clean up the third floor of my house. All right, the next one we've got is on April. This is one that's near and dear to our hearts because April 26th through the 28th in Pontiac, Michigan, at the Auburn Hills Marriott Pontiac at Centerpoint. Where the heck is that? There's like three cities all in one. It must be sitting right close to Auburn. We've got PenguinCon 2013. Think of a weekend-long Linux user group meeting with hundreds of other geeks which also just happens to have a nationally acclaimed guest, its own wireless network, hotel room parties. It also has just a ton of sci-fi stuff there too.
Yeah, well, because it's a combination of science fiction fantasy mm-hmm. and Linux.
Yes.
So there are two tracks. There's a science fiction fantasy track, and there's the Linux track.
Yeah, and you get free caffeine. They've got a costume contest. It's got free snacks.
Free beer in the con suite.
In the con suite, that's right.
So come on out.
That's right. And then one of the Kickstarter projects, the guys that do the homemade soda, they got a little Kickstarter project.
The open soda people?
Yeah, the open soda folks to try to raise, because I think apparently there was some rule change or something that they're a little out of compliance with some of their machines. It's not anything that PenguinCon did, but I think as far as...
With some of their what?
The machinery that they use, the devices they use to make that soda pop. So they have to get some kind of... It has to be... I don't know. It was on a little video that the Kickstarter project had. So that's why they're having this little Kickstarter mm-hmm. fundraiser. So, but they were talking about it. So anyway, but that's coming up at the end of the month. And also at the end of the month, but starting one day later, we've got Linux Fest Northwest 2013, April 27th and 28th in Bellingham, Washington. Now, this is an annual event produced by the Bellingham Linux User Group and volunteers from other Northwest U.S. open source user groups. It's held at the campus of Bellingham Technical College. And it features Linux open source experts and aficionados to share their experience and enthusiasm with a wide variety of free and open source technologies. Sounds like fun.
Cool.
Yeah, it does. And
see, I want my job to be just to go to Linux Fest.
Okay, so that's the Linux convention scene. What do we have next?
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is 313-626-9140.
And so our listener feedback is going to be...
I've got it. I saved it. Yes, and actually we got one. I'll talk about the one while you maybe stage the other.
Which one?
It was from Vastlin.
I've got two from Vastlin.
Yes, I exactly. And he thanked us. He thanked us for our review of Vicito last week, you know, and again, that was the
right.
Debian-based. I really liked it. As a matter of fact, it's still on my laptop. It was greatly appreciated that we took the time to review it, and he was especially impressed that you got KDE to install and function correctly. Yeah, it was not a problem at all. And, I mean, that's further testament to the fact that that distro seems pretty solid to me. He also... Matt, he had a comment for you, too. He says he does similar work, I think, for some of the work that you used to do as far as FOSS to public school systems.
Well, yeah. My own company is
still
an active company.
Yeah.
So. I got new business cards coming.
Well, good. Good for you. And then the other thing, too, because I had made that comment about having problems with the wireless using Seni, and I ended up using Wicked, and that seemed to work fine. So he's going to go back in and take a look at that.
Yeah. He thinks he's going to put Wicked in as the
mm-hmm.
default.
I think he should, because it had no I had no problem using
right.
it there, because I set up a service to start when I booted, and it was good. But yeah, Seni just was somewhat problematic.
Seni's hard to use.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little confusing. I had trouble with it when I was using Seduction.
Yeah, because you go through the list. And, I mean, I was going through making sure my settings were right, and then...
Yeah, whenever I used Seni, whenever I changed access points, I wound up having to change all the settings in Seni and then reboot the computer.
Okay.
So it was just a pain in the ass.
All right.
Then we have David Ellis.
Yes.
Who says, hey guys, hearing your offline discussion, I thought I would send you this email. I don't know if you've heard about Ting, but it could be a low-cost hotspot. So before the show started, we had our broadcast going a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about how bad the network connection is at Tony's.
Yeah.
No offense, Tony. And he was recommending this Ting as a hotspot. So
cool. And we also had you had gotten something that somebody was listening to your setup, your tool, your quote-unquote tool setup. And I'm not going to say torturous upgrade path.
It wasn't torturous. It just took a while. Yes.
Yeah. And so he had a, I thought he had a kind of a funny little comment about, do you remember that?
Yeah.
From Mark
Upgrade Miller. Woes.
Yeah.
Yes, he recommended that I switch to Arch Linux, and then I can just do Pacman dash uppercase S y lowercase YU.
Yeah, and that shades of Chakra, because that's Chakra uses that too, so that's what I used to do.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, but I think I'm going to stick with Fedora for now, anyway. We also had one from Michael. He wants us to plug Make Munich. So let's plug Make Munich. You didn't even have this in your convention scene, Mary. Make Munich is coming up soon. It's on
it's not a Linux
fest. I know. It's on the 20th and 21st of April in Munich. And it's a maker fest. And if you go to a make-munich.de/en, you can read all about it.
Yeah, and I wonder if they're... I bet they have people there that maybe make homemade beer.
Maybe. Yeah,
maybe. Maybe not, I don't know.
Maybe they'll have the 3D gun printer there. Did you see that there's a U.S. company that has gotten a federal firearms license to use a 3D printer to make a firearm?
Yes, I think I read that, but I also read that it's just still not possible.
Right, the technology is not there yet because of the pressures involved and making something that would withstand those pressures. But they've already got it, so that when the technology catches up, they can go ahead and do it.
I just think it's insane.
Why?
Well, I just think I don't think the solving the gun issue we have here in the States.
Give more people guns. That's the answer.
That is not the answer.
That is the answer.
That's an answer, but it's not the answer.
It is the answer.
It's all a matter of preposition. All right. Well, we're not going to get into that because we want to end on a positive.
There you go.
Not beat each other up. I think that was really all of the.
That's all I have.
Yeah, that's all that I had, too.
Except I have a soapbox.
Okay.
And it's on rudeness in IRC channels and unhelpfulness in the supposed support channel.
Oh, I remember you talking about that.
Yes. And first, we have to give the disclaimer that this is Matt's soapbox. So, warning, this article may contain opinions of mine that you and Sunday Morning Linux Review don't necessarily agree with. Don't let me get away with it. Have your say with some listener feedback and so respond to show@smlr.us.
Yeah, that was to take care of that was one of your earlier...
Yeah, where I went off on Richard Stallman.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we got some nasty mail. So, you know, it's clear that it's Matt's opinion.
Yes,
one of several thousand opinions.
Yes, it is my opinion. My peeve this week...
Right.
Is with an IRC channel, form, or mailing list that are supposed to be friendly and supportive, but are not. Now, I'm not a new user, and thank God, because after my experience this week, and I say this week, but it was really last week, because I didn't do this last week because we were running long on the show. In a supposed support IRC channel, I was having trouble getting a third-party repo to work, so I went into their IRC channel for the distribution that I'm using.
Which is?
I'm not going to say right now. Which they do not make easy, as you have to have your NIC registered with Freenode. You can't get into the channel unless you've registered your NIC with Freenode. So new users. New users aren't going to, and the directions are a little arcane to follow.
Yeah,
but I did it. I got my NIC registered with Freenode. And so then I said... that after I did that, the problem was getting the key visible to Yum.
That was tough.
Right. I would try and do the Yum update, and the key wasn't there. And I couldn't get Yum to see the repo key. I couldn't figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was asked in the channel for the for the euro of the repo,
mm-hmm.
the two gentlemen that were in there that mm-hmm. were going to try and help me, as soon as they saw the open SUSE at the beginning of it, stopped helping me. They said, "It's we don't help with broken repositories here. That's not." And mm-hmm. I'm like, "Wait a minute! You're not even asking me what the error. It's broken. We're not." And they were quite rude.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so they were insulting and belligerent. So I'm not going to say what the IRC channel was, but if you listen, you can figure it out. And they never even asked what the problem was. They just assumed that the packages were broken. This pissed me off so much that I figured out what I was doing wrong in about 15 minutes. After I was trying this for a whole week first.
Yeah.
So even though they did not directly help, I guess in a way they did, because I was so mad I fixed it myself.
So hey, thank you guys.
Yeah.
Not IRC.
Right.
You guys are great.
So let's all remember that we don't have to have blinders on and say that it's not supported here. Take your problem elsewhere. You know, let's ask some mm-hmm. questions and find out just what the problem is first, and maybe you'll be able to help anyway.
Well, wasn't it kind of a Stallman-esque reaction in a way?
It was just rude and over the top. They could have, if they weren't going to help me with it, they could have handled it much better than the way they did. You know, I'm assuming these were children. Not adults.
Oh.
You okay. know. Or if they were adults, they were very immature adults.
Yeah.
Because it was just handled badly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But a good thing that came out about this is Tony and I were in Panera on Friday.
Studying.
For our weekly study session.
How much studying did you really do?
This Friday, none. And he was trying to give me op status in our IRC channel. In order to do that, I had to have a registered Freenode nickname. So I had to log in with my already registered Freenode nickname,
mm-hmm.
which I did. Mm-hmm. And when I did, there was a message there. It said that I had a message, which I didn't even know you could do. So I clicked it and read it, and it was this guy who had seen that transaction take place in the to remain nameless channel, and said, "Hey, we've made this other channel just to deal with the rudeness fallout from this channel.
Oh.
So if you want some real help and some real friendly interaction, go to this other channel," which mm-hmm. which I will say is #PoundFedora on Freenode.net.
Pound,
and if you go to #PoundFedora, you will not encounter the rudeness problems. There are very friendly gentlemen there who I then went into that channel and had a chat with them, and they were great.
Oh, fantastic. So, I'm glad it turned out well.
So, yeah. So there's another friendly channel, #PoundFedora. And I will say what the first channel was. But
you can infer it.
You can infer it, yes.
All right.
So.
Well, good, Matt. You know, all's well that ends well, and that ended well, and I'm glad to hear
yes.
it.
So.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
Featured music of the week.
Here it is, Fountains by Sinkhole.
The Sunday Morning Linux Reviews is episode 77, the M&M Show.
The M&M Show.
That's right. This is
Matt Enders
and Mary Tomich
saying have a good week. See you next week.